This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Who decided to debate, and the one that everybody wanted to see, let's face it, he is the show that would be the ex-president Donald Trump, who had no need to debate because he's so far ahead of everybody else in the race. Hey, everybody. Once again, Kate Delaney, thanks for hanging with us here on the show. As I said, you know, if you're the others, and so much is about Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, then it's, you know, it's yours to argue and pull apart your opponents and try to emerge as the closest that you can to the numbers that, you know, we're seeing the former president, Donald Trump, garner in every single poll, no matter what the poll is. You can talk about polls and, oh, this poll is that and whatever, but they're all the same. They're all showing 30 plus points, huge numbers in so many cases. I mean, nothing is close about that. So the Republican National Committee, you know, the RNC, announcing that, you know, they at least had leading up to the debate, they at least had eight that were qualified for the first one in Milwaukee, because you got to do the polling, you got to meet the polling numbers. So they've met enough of the polling numbers. You got to meet the donor requirements and all of that. But the star of the show would have been Donald Trump, but no need for Trump to debate Mike Pence, his former VP, or the New Jersey governor, Chris Christie, or the former South Carolina governor, Nikki Haley, or South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, or the conservative entrepreneur, or the North Dakota governor, or the Arkansas governor, because the numbers, when your numbers are that big, you know what, it in a different way, this is a loose analogy, but it's kind of like when people are selling something, they could be decent salespeople, but they keep talking. They've already made the sale, and they keep going, and then they almost talk themselves out of the sale, and then the person has too much information. So in the case of Trump, he would have been huge for the media and anybody covering the debate, which was everyone in some form, but it wouldn't have meant that much. It would have meant that much, rather, to him, because he already has the numbers, right? And he already put to rest all of the turning self in, what am I going to do with the Georgia indictment, because that happened. So, yes, there were people that were jammed in to watch, to see, and there were all, the barricades have been up for weeks now, really, in some of the areas in Fulton County, and that's it. And the thing that's interesting is, thinking, okay, let's fast track this. This is gonna, the DA saying in Atlanta, this is, let's get this in March. I don't even think we're gonna see it in 2024, and we certainly have talked about that. Because so many of you sent me emails about this, about the gas prices. Yes, the gas prices are up. I hate it. I do. I hate it. Because they're just, even though you know it's happening and we've been talking about it, I'm watching this. I do this for a living. I watch this. I know people in this industry. But having it go up where, like, look, for our friends in California, and you just had that terrible, horrible weather that you had to deal with, you're unleaded, regular unleaded. You're at 526. Wow. And the rest of us aren't quite at four, maybe some of us, but we're up 30 cents in this last whole month, the last 6 weeks, and we're feeling it. We're feeling it. You know, it's just like when you hear about the grocery store and, oh, things have come down, and I plan out some meals and I go to the grocery store and I think, wow, how are people that are on really limited salaries doing this? How are they stretching their dollars, especially if they have a lot of mouths to feed, because it is expensive. I mean, yeah, some things have come down, but the some things are a handful of things. Now, you wonder why, when we're supposed to eat better, still, even though it's gone up a little bit, fast food, my friends, we know it, is cheaper. Look, it is cheaper. All right, bad news on the COVID front. we're starting to hear that some mask mandates are falling into place. There have been more cases of COVID. It's a different strain. There's a lot of conversation about EG5 as what it's is the new variant. It's becoming more dominant. So Lionsgate Studio in California, they're asking some of the employees to mask up and self-test. And this is, you know, on their floors of Lionsgate in Santa Monica because they had a lot of people. I say a lot. They had a handful of people that caught the virus. So because that's happening, they feel like they justified the mask mandate. Let's just do this. And it kind of makes me wonder, are there other industries? Will other industries follow suit? Are they going to watch what happens with COVID? Are you going to start to get a lot of phone calls that I can't come in? I can't come in. I've got COVID. And this also plays into the whole working from home thing. Because when did working from home start? Working from home started when COVID hit, which even saying the word makes me queasy. And I told the story of my aunt, who's awesome, and she's in good shape. In fact, she just even lost a few more pounds. She was excited to celebrate her 80th birthday. She looks nowhere near 80 years old, and she got COVID because she volunteers at this store where they help people all over the place. It's one of those resale stores, and they had a customer appreciation day, and there were lots and lots of people that were given free things. And she said it was the biggest crowd that she had been in. So somebody must have had it. That would be the only place that she was at, or she could have gotten someplace else. Luckily she's fine, but didn't feel great. You know, had that tiredness, that headachey kind of thing. But, it's something to pay attention to because I think more of you who employ people may be getting those phone calls. The housing market, we just had this conversation the other day about affordability. It's worse now than at the height of the housing bubble in 2006, which is so sad to say. The average 30-year fixed mortgage, and because I say this show's about what's affecting you in your backyard and mine in my backyard, reached 7.48%. That's the highest level since the year 2000. And when you look at affordability, yeah, it's that people aren't getting the house, especially if the house, what is the house priced at, right? So you have the rate surge coupled with the pandemic housing boom pushing U.S. home prices up over 40% in just 2 years. So that's deteriorated the housing affordability across the nation. So when people talk about moving and talking about that they want to go here and they're looking at prices, some of them are just saying, no, we're going to wait. We're not going to put our house up, or we're going to wait because it's the affordability challenges are terrible. And it makes it impossible for some people to feel like they can rebound, that it'd be better to wait. I mean, it is a waiting game, right? You're always looking to get in at the right time, but this is really the worst time. And it's not plagued by risky mortgage products or any of that, you know, that we saw that contributed to what happened in the bust in 2008. It's the opposite. It's the households with high incomes who, because of low mortgage rates and remote work, were looking for a new home. And so that kind of changed everything of where can we live. All right. Coming up next, got some great guests for you. So hang on for the ride. I'll meet you on the flip side.
It's obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media are distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the real concerns of American families. Countries we're at odds with are hoarding food, financial systems are strained, and supply chains remain too fragile. We can tell something is coming, so we're preparing. Folks are getting into self-reliance and investing in emergency food storage. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. And while you're there, stock up on water filtration, heirloom seeds, and emergency gear, too, at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendivite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendivite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendivite is all natural. Extendivite was designed for the heart, but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendivite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog. Yeah, that's Guinness. He is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Or hit me up on Twitter at Kate S. Delaney. At Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.
Ubiquitous bits of information, a.k.a. fun facts. That's what we're talking about here. Jeremy Paulson joins us, the technical maestro for this particular show. Jeremy, this is always so fun. I can't wait to see what you have in store for us because you get to go first.
Hey, hey. Well, I always go first.
That's right.
So I did film because we're both huge film buffs. We both love film stuff. So so I just did a bunch of like key history moments in film. Do you know when the golden age of cinema was?
Golden age of cinema. Let me think about it. In the 20s?
The 30s and the 40s is considered the golden age of cinema. Do you know why the 30s and 40s were considered the golden age of cinema? There's two key reasons.
Probably because they weren't silent films anymore. And by the 30s, they weren't producing them anymore. I think you had the jazz singer was the first talkie or whatever. Nice. So things changed.
Yeah, that was the beginning. That's why the 30s was considered the golden age. And you actually got my first key point. Is in the 1900s, films were silent. And then they made the first sound film, which was called talkies, was the jazz singer in 1927.
Yeah.
So then in the 30s, it got popular because it was the first, like, sound films came out.
Yeah.
Now, do you know why the 40s was the other portion of the golden age of cinema?
40s. Because of, they weren't black and white anymore. There was, everything was in color.
See, you're a champ. You're a champ today. Yeah, the films were originally black and white, and many experimented with color. But in 1939, the first big market color film came out. When was, what was that?
first big market? I don't know. What was it?
Wizard of Oz.
Ah, Wizard of Oz.
1939. Oh, the Wizard of Oz
I
came
out. I love
it. It was huge,
yeah.
Color film. So
yes.
It was huge, and they made the 40s bring more golden age cinema.
Yeah. Wow, what
a
difference.
They're all colored.
Yeah. Yeah, what a difference the Technicolor would make. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so those were the two biggest, like, history ones. And the next one would be, so they did the first, like, big popularity 3D film was in the 2000s with Avatar, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually not when they experimented and did 3D films. When was the first 3D film?
Ooh, first 3D film. I'm going to say in the 90s.
That was 1950.
Oh my God!
Which is why the 30s and the 40s were the big golden age cinema, because in the 50s they experimented with 3D and everyone hated it.
Oh, that's when people had to wear glasses, and you see old pictures of that. I should have known that.
So cinema faltered after that.
Yeah,
no one liked it. And then in the 2000s with Avatar, it got huge popularity again with 3D films. And today you have 4D films.
Oh,
with shaking cars or shaking chairs, hot and cold, like fans blowing hot and cold air on you, and even smells. They even induce smells into the
theater.
Into the theater, you know?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? You know, when you go to get a ticket for some of those big films, like you made the point about Avatar, you have to decide, do you kind of, I call it regular, do you want your regular film, or do you want 3D in some cases? Do you want, what experience do you want? And then the ticket costs a little bit more. I just like to watch the film straight up.
You wouldn't go to a 4D? I would want to see an awesome 4D film.
Well, it'd have to be, I guess it would depend on the movie. If it was a movie where I thought it would make a huge difference, yeah, I guess I would. Right? I mean, I don't know. I go to the movies a lot with my nephew, and he hates it when it's like, and he's into film, and that's like part of his degree. He hates it when it's just too loud and insane. You know, when it's too much.
It's more like a theater ride than a film, right?
Right. And I get that, because he would be more of a purist at 21. And I understand that, because he wants to hear the dialogue. He wants to see what the filmmaker's doing. He wants to pay attention to that. But you know what? Some films, it is about that. Some films, it is about the special effects, because that would be another special effect.
Yeah.
Right, so it just depends. Oh, interesting. They were good.
Yeah, you
nice.
Knew most of them. So.
Yeah, nice. Oh, yeah, I love
showing
movies.
Your just film
like,
knowledge.
Oh, love movies, love them. All right, so coming up, the next Olympics is, when we look at the Olympics, the Summer Olympics is in Paris. And it's the 26th of July through August 11th, 2024. I know some people who are actually going to go work the Olympics. I can't imagine what that would be like, although they're excited to go do the whole Olympic thing. So I thought it would be fun to look at, because people are talking about the Olympics more, to talk about a little bit about the history of Olympics. Do you know what country is the only country to have at least one gold medal at every Summer Olympics?
Every Summer Olympic, only one gold medal. Ooh.
To have at least one gold medal at every Summer Olympics.
Is it not the U.S.?
That was a good guess. Great Britain, England. And then in the ancient Olympic Games, there were no gold, silver, and bronze medals. There was only one winner, actually. I like that. Per event, and they were crowned with an olive wreath made of wild olive leaves. That's what you got. Here is your olive leaf crown. But it makes sense. I mean, think of the times, right? But I do think it's interesting. There wasn't any three places. You know, there's just, you're the winner. That's it, period. And how about that? The first recorded ancient Olympic Games in Olympia were 776 B.C. That just seems crazy. I mean, we're talking about bare-chested shields and, you know, way different than what we're seeing now. The first modern Olympics, 1896 in Athens, of course.
Okay.
Right? Because that's where a lot of that went down. I think the Olympics are so interesting. The first winter, what they officially called Winter Games, happened in Chamonix, and it was in 1924. So, you know, we're talking about France. Some people think the Olympics have lost their luster, but when I think of what the athletes go through and the sports, I like that whole international competition. I do. I think it's good.
You kind of need it to build camaraderie, to deal with other nations.
Yes, that's exactly what I think, because you see that friendly competition, and you see them when the opening ceremonies and then the closing ceremonies. So I think it's huge. The host city designs the Olympic medals for each game, and each must be at least, I thought this was pretty interesting, 60 millimeters in diameter and 3 millimeters thick. The gold medals have to be covered in 6 grams of gold, and silver has to contain 92.5% silver. Yeah, because they don't want you skimping on it, giving you some of that crappy silver.
Zinc
tarnished
metal.
Yeah, it's tarnished. I don't understand. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the Olympic rings signify the world's 5 major regions: Africa, the Americas, Asia, Europe, Oceania. And the colors are blue, yellow, black, green, and red. And they're used wherever the ceremonies are, and that's the official flag of what the Olympics is. And this is pretty interesting to me. The U.S., and specifically CBS, first televised the Olympics during the 1960 Rome Games. Can you imagine? People were probably huddled around TV sets watching that, because they hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be some, and there was no streaming and competition. I mean, that would be the only game in town, and you'd have all these American athletes. So I think that's pretty interesting. Definitely.
Did you hear that they're trying to get football in the Olympics by making it a flag sport?
Yes.
Flag football.
Flag football.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about flag football?
I would rather have sumo wrestling in the Olympics. I like flag football. I think it's a great thing, but I would much rather. I think sumo wrestling should be an Olympic sport because of the tradition and heritage, like how long
the background.
It's been going on.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes complete sense. Well, there you go. And we are out of UBIs. Thank you very much, Jeremy.
You're welcome.
By the way, I'm going to throw this in. The London Games in 1908, the first opening ceremony, and that's always a very big deal. Coming up next, it's about eating better. Boy, we all try, don't we? Some great nutrition tips from you, Sean Chen, coming up around the bend.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA News Update. The Jacksonville, Florida sheriff says Saturday's shooting was, quote, sicking ideologies that do not reflect the community and doesn't believe that there's a racial divide in the city. Three people were shot to death Saturday at a dollar store. Three U.S. Marines are dead after their military aircraft went down in northern Australia. Australia's defense ministry says the crash happened during an annual exercise involving the militaries of the U.S., Australia, Indonesia, and the Philippines. Texas has sent another bus full of migrants to Los Angeles. Mayor Karen Bass releasing a statement saying 39 more people, including 21 children, arrived in the city needing shelter. She criticized Texas Governor Greg Abbott, calling the move a, quote, political act. Gran Turismo is expected to hold off Barbie for number one in North American theaters. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer, and we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Find a manuscript, and it's your mother's manuscript, and she's got this fascinating journey that she's written about, and you're going to take what's in this manuscript and you're going to turn it into a couple of books. That's exactly what happened to our next guest on Author's Corner, Hugh Hyland's mother, Ann Angelo, sometimes called Annie. You know how we have these nicknames. She was the one who actually put the manuscript together and talked about her life, what it was like being brought up in Scotland, followed by France into World War II, which to me is so fascinating. Hugh, thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
So tell me about the manuscript and splitting it into two books. What was that like when you found that and decided, you know, I'm going to turn this into some books?
Well, during COVID, I came across this suitcase or briefcase full of manuscript papers, et cetera. And looking through it, it was the story that my mother had written back in 1949. I actually remember her typing it out in London. So looking at it, it had three genres. The first one was interwar in the 1920s and 30s, initially being brought up in Scotland, harsh condition, etc. And then fleeing basically her father to get away, going to France as a governess. And then the war started, so that's where the second book, which is called The Forbidden Land, 1940. And basically hooks up with a British army officer. They have they fall in love. The Germans then subsequently come into the country, so he has to withdraw. He isn't fortunate enough to get out in time, and he's sort of stuck there in the Forbidden Zone, which is in the northwest, where the Germans were preparing to invade England. But he couldn't get out, and he was having all sorts of problems. People there didn't have food, they were freezing cold. She'd occasionally go and sit a German in the bins just to get thrown in jail so that she could actually eat something.
Wow.
And she joined the French resistance, and they were helping to get the top-down British airmen back to England. But then the price came on her head. The Gestapo were after her, and she had to escape as she escaped into the occupied zone of France, from the Forbidden Zone, and then down into the unoccupied or the Vichy Zone of France, and then eventually got back to England. She got back to Scotland first, and then she went down to London. And right at the end of the second book, she actually meets up with her British Army officer. So that's the second genre. That's the story of what I found in this manuscript.
Wow. So take us back to the beginning. What was life like in Scotland for her?
It was pretty horrible. Apart from the weather being pretty bad, her father was a real cruel type just to his children and his wife. And he was trying to get her married off. And she just basically couldn't stand it, and she studied to be a pharmacist, but he wouldn't let her take the exams down in Edinburgh University. So in desperation, she got a job in France as a governess.
Wow, and what was that job like? Did she talk about that?
Yeah, in the book, she was very... It was a new life for her, because it was in a nice family. She was governess to these children, and they were growing up. And she had the run of the place, and now it was a different life altogether. And then when the children did sort of leave, grow up, etc., she ended up running the large house that her employer had. She ended up running that as a small private hotel, and that was right up until the war started, and then, of course, that was a refuge for escaping British servicemen.
Yeah, and you talk about being in that forbidden zone. I mean, that's the second book, the part of being there when the Germans were there, and you mentioned it, things that happened to her in 1939, 1941, through that time period. I mean, the hardship had to have been tremendous. For you reading that, and this is your mother, and then going through these details, it had to make, I would think, it would make you have a sort of a different admiration maybe for her, even if you knew some of the story. What was it like to read her words and then put this into this book?
Well, I had read it back in around about 1980, when she was sort of rewriting it with the daughter, and I had been helping her in books and pieces. And also before that, even being brought up as a young kid, she was occasionally mentioning bits and pieces about the hardships that she'd gone through in the north. And literally when she was fleeing from Lille in the north of France down to Paris, and in, lines and lines of refugees, and you'd have, German aircraft coming over and bombing them and machine gunning and all the rest of it. And she managed to survive all this. It wasn't a total surprise. It was, the story that sort of developed a bit more detail.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a story, you're really talking about it, hardship, survival, and then love. And then the love aspect of it after everything she'd been through had to be tremendous, and to be able to read that.
Yeah, so, I mean, the overall story's got everything in it. It's got, you know, the hardship of being brought up and as a young child in Scotland, and an entirely different sort of speech therapy in France, different language, different culture, then the experiments and the invasion and occupation and the hardship, and no food and freezing cold in the north of France, and then straight back to England, and finally meeting up with the man she eventually married. But I mean, the story overall has got pretty well everything in it.
I think it does. It's very gripping. I mean, that's the word I would use, gripping. And by the way, there is a website. It's the ForbiddenZone1940.com, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can, and it's a great website. I mean, you can poke around there for sure. When people read the book.
And there's also another website too, and it's called, I think it's called, SprigglesQuietHeather.com.
Okay.
For the first half.
For the first half. So there's two websites that you can, certainly you can go to. So when people...
But if you look up Anne Angelo, it comes with her book.
Yes. So when people read your mother's books, what do you hope they take away?
Well, it's a different era. You get these war stories, etc. But this particular one, I've never seen in any other war story of, you know, the Forbidden Zone and people that actually went through having to exist and survive, basically, in that era. And, you know, you had the cruelty of the Germans. And basically, we did survival. You know, had to get out and had to escape. And it's a very vivid story of how she escaped.
Yeah. I mean, you have to feel proud of your mom and the fact that you were able to split this and get the manuscript and then put it out there and having people actually being able to go and understand what that was like. Because, yes, there are accounts of things that happen, but this is really unique, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. It's a firsthand story. It's not a group story. It's a firsthand story that has in the area that... previously, I had never sort of heard or seen written.
Yeah. And, you know, when you read the books, just jumping into my mind, it makes me think how awful things were then, or tough or bad or whatever word you want to use, and then how we see that history can repeat itself, right? So that maybe there's a lesson in that.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things. I mean, history does repeat itself. I mean, what's going on in Ukraine right now is basically what is going on up there. I mean, people are just sort of, they're caught up in these things and they have to somehow survive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You think your mother would be proud that this, you know, that you took the manuscript a step further and it's really available for anyone to read in these books?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think she'd be very proud. I mean, it's available in hardcover, softcover, audio book, and also online. So it's in every format. I know there's one blind lady who had it, and she raved about it.
Exactly. It is definitely a page turner. There's no question about it. And as Hugh mentioned, all those different forms, whatever form you like, you can get it in. And of course, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, the websites, you can certainly go there. Hugh Hyland, thank you so much. And again, Anne Angelo, the name of his mother, you can always look it up that way too. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog, yeah, that's Dennis. He is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Or hit me up on Twitter at Kate S. Delaney. At Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
With us. His book is called Gray Feathers, Led by Love of Country. Wait till you hear his story. Daniel, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Kate. I'm glad to talk to you.
Let's talk about what Gray Feathers is all about. Take us back to the late 60s and where you were.
I had the fortunate or unfortunate experience of being assigned to the 3rd Battalion, 12th Infantry in the 4th Infantry Division. And the battalion was stationed in the Pleiku Anke area, which is right at the tri-border area of Vietnam. It's a border of Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. It was an area where the infiltration routes of the NVA lined up to Highway 19, which was a main supply route toward Quy Nhon. Many operations were in that area. It was a very difficult area to go through. Is heavy vegetation, heavy jungle area, in a mountainous region.
Yeah, so you were there with machetes, just having to every day hack away to where you were going, right?
We had to use machetes a number of times, yes.
Wow. And you and I talked about this, which, I mean, I want the listeners to really think about this every day when you got up. I mean, obviously you were in the middle of war. You know, who knew it was going to happen every single day? And in that group, weren't you like second in line because you were the guy that really knew the maps?
Well, I always chose to be either number two or number three and had the point person in front of me because it's easier to control. Because going through the mountain, they didn't have GPS back then. It was all through a topographical map. And by using the topographical map, we had to go through around and through hills and stream beds. So it was a very difficult way of traversing the terrain. I was fortunate. I read the map correctly most times. But I did make a few mistakes here and there.
And if you made a few mistakes, what did that mean? I meant enemy fire, maybe.
Our own fire, actually.
Yeah. Whoa.
We had to worry about friendly fire and enemy fire when you make a mistake.
Yeah, no kidding. How close was this unit? I mean, when you're in the middle of it, you were in the thick of it. What were their guys like? What was that like?
You know, people work together in adverse circumstances, and that's what really happened in the war. Because you're always under tense, you always feel the tension. And you can sleep more than 2 hours at a time because you always want to see what's going on. So you have sleep is not really something you do. You sleep out in the open underneath a poncho or a little, what they call a jungle blanket, and you're prepared to get out at a minute's notice. So it's very tense. And those are the problems that you have in your leadership because most days things don't happen. But when it does, it's really a big combat area and a lot of fire that you have to go through when that day comes.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you talk about in your book. It's you show how difficult it can be. You have to make make decisions when you're under fire. Even if you're enlisted, whether you're an officer or whatever, it's the pure pressure of being in battle. You got to make the decisions. You got to look at the movements. And you were supporting units like helicopter, gunships, F-4 Phantom pilots, supply transporters. So you also had a big job. You never knew what that was going to be, right?
That's right. You did not know from day to day. And, you know, the greatest thing, though, everybody worked together. We worked as a decision body. We worked in trying to improve our lot with the enemy. I mean, it was a cohesive group that I was a part of.
Yeah. You know, you talked about it in the very beginning. You were talking about this main supply route that was that the field was Highway 19. And the Highway 19 was, paint that picture for us. I mean, look, you could have mines there, right? You could be ambushed at any moment.
Yes, and that's where the French lost all their soldiers at, and from an ambush on Highway 19. Years before we were in Vietnam. Highway 19 is just a paved road, and it's a very small two-lane road going several miles into the country of Vietnam. And Quy Nhon and Pleiku are the main players between those two cities. We had tanks go down that road. We had mostly our convoys go down that road, but I've been ambushed several times while traveling with a convoy on that road.
Yeah, wow. Crazy. So, Gray Feathers, tell us about the book. What are the kinds of stories and impactful things that you impart about decision-making that we'll learn by reading your book?
Well, part of it is how you react in battle, the kind of tactics and operations that were used, such as blocking forces, having ambush patrols at night, what do the long-range reconnaissance patrol bring to you, what happens when you attack and format, and what kind of things do you do during an attack, what kind of defensive position that you maintain even without cover, because a lot of times you're out in the field and there's no cover around to stop the bullets or stop the shrapnel from coming towards you. But it's a very tense time on each of the battles that I was in. One of the battles I remember is we had a hill where all the enemy were on top of the hill, and they were shooting down at us, which is probably the worst position that we could be in. And we decided in my platoon to go up. It was a heavy cliff that we climbed up to get to the top. It surprised the enemy and we were able to capture a number of them before they left. So it was something you always seem to remember, climbing that steep, I don't know, maybe 50 feet. It seemed like a forever when you're climbing something like that. But it did surprise the enemy during that time. And there are other instances where you try to rescue people during the time of contact, and under heavy contact, you try to control the withdrawals and move off the contact site to safety. And that's become very tricky as you go through the contact site.
Yeah, and we're speaking to Daniel DeWald. The name of the book is Gray Feathers, Led by Love of Country. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold, as I like to say. So Gray Feathers is significant, the term Gray Feathers, which is why you named the book this. Tell us what Gray Feathers means.
Gray Feathers is an Indian term. When braves first get into the tribe, they are given a gray feather for becoming just a member. And as they progress through their tribes and accomplish things, colored feathers are given to them. So if you look at the chiefs, you'll see a lot of multiple different colors in their headbands. And basically, I felt that'd be a good theme because you watch each other's back. You make sure that everyone's going to survive, and you make sure that you always try to work for the best for the platoon and for your company to make headway into the war and try to work together. And I think that made us lose less people, although every day it was always because bullets know no name. So yeah. You have to really watch.
For you, what was it like coming back after all of that everyday intense camaraderie, watching each other's back, lack of sleep, making those quick decisions? What was it like when you leave the immersion of that and then come back to the U.S.?
You know, in 2 years, that's how long I was away, you come back to a complete change. People over here were not really used to the war. They didn't really sacrifice for the war. It was just people over there by newspaper reports. People were protesting the war. It was just different coming back. It didn't seem like people had respect for the uniform when you came back. But it takes a while for you to get your feet back on the ground and survive in a civilian life.
Yeah, I bet. And thank you for your service. What do you hope people take away, Daniel, from reading this book?
I want them to understand the sacrifice that people made to be in the war, the loyalty that they gave to the country, and the strength that the men had to make things happen in the war. It was a difficult war because there wasn't any fronts. You were hit from all sides when you were in the war, and it was difficult to achieve winning. And I think that's the hardest part about the Vietnam War. It's hard to win. And then at the end, we couldn't win over the people, and that's who made their government. So we lost the entire reason we were there. So I think that's the hard part about learning about it. But it's by love of country that we served, and we did our best in our to serve correctly.
Yeah, well, this book is a great book, and it really does take you back, absolutely. And it's Gray Feathers, Led by Love of Country, Daniel DeWald. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Kate. Good talking to you.
You too.
Hey guys, why settle for poor quality Powdy Arco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea at drinksupertea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea is only available at drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.